The shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha by police is reverberating around the national political stage, and the Republican National Convention continues to make news with two nights to go. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you watched one or both nights of the RNC so far? What do you think? Did you watch the DNC? How do you compare and contrast the two events? If you are one of the rare undecided voters out there, what are you looking for? What are you hearing from the parties? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a senior political reporter for The Guardian based in Washington, where she covers Congress and the Democratic 2020 presidential campaign. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been covering the Republican National Convention this week. What are some of the themes you've seen in the first two nights?
We've seen, so the first night was a real focus on what an America would look like under a Biden administration. You heard Donald Trump's son, his Donald Trump Jr., his son's girlfriend. They really outlined this very dark vision of a nation overrun with crime, with, you know, in their view, socialism. And so we sort of saw a very ferocious attack, I would say, on the Democrats and on Joe Biden in particular. The second night was more of an emphasis on Donald Trump. You saw a lot of speakers really try to soften his image, perhaps an appeal. There was a clear appeal to women and voters of color who he hasn't done as well with, according to polls. And we also heard from his wife, who offered a very empathetic and heartfelt sympathies to all of the Americans suffering from the coronavirus, those infected, those who lost loved ones. And that was actually the first time that we'd really heard anyone who spoke at the convention really address the sort of reality that many Americans are facing. She directly said, "I know many of you might feel alone right now, but you are not alone. And I understand, you know, we feel sympathy with you."
I want to give a listen to that actually exact moment. We have that here. Here's a listen to First Lady Melania Trump talking about COVID-19 last night.
The invisible enemy, COVID-19, swept across our beautiful country and impacted all of us. My deepest sympathy goes out to everyone who has lost a loved one. And my prayers are with those who are ill or suffering. I know many people are anxious and some feel helpless. I want you to know you're not alone.
But as you said, that was the only significant mention of coronavirus in the couple of nights so far.
Yes, we heard some speakers, you know, sort of offhandedly mention it. Others, you know, actually one of the White House economic advisors referred to it in the past tense as if, you know, this chapter was behind us. So I think, you know, it's a tricky issue for the president because, you know, people are still getting infected. There are the death rate, you know, is while we're, you know, thankfully it's coming down, you know, people are still dying of this. And so he hasn't fully gotten control of the coronavirus. The economy is still, you know, in crisis mode. Millions of people are still unemployed. So it's not a selling point for Donald Trump in these last few weeks before Election Day. At the same time, it is difficult to really ignore something that is so widespread and affects so many Americans.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm very proud of the Republican National Convention. It's really pro-America. It's making you feel patriotic. It's making you feel like we have a consistent, stable message as a party. And we have a new congressman in northern Wisconsin, a Republican. And, you know, it's hard for Democrats to take responsibility for their own health and for their own lives. So it's a really it's not a message they want to hear. They want the government to take care of them. But when it comes to Republican Party, they can certainly find a stable message that is not going to be, you know, killing babies and defending people's freedoms to protest and, you know, impact violence on communities and things like that. We need to have a strong, stable government. And I'm very proud the Republicans are sending that message.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Messages, a lot of them that do appeal to Republicans, not surprisingly, Lauren.
Exactly. We actually heard several speakers talk about abortion and, you know, specifically address Democrats, attack Democrats' position on abortion and you know, remind voters that Donald Trump has taken actions to, you know, he's put justices on the Supreme Court who, even though they don't take positions on Roe v. Wade, you know, are seen as more conservative, more pro-life. So he's taken actions that I think a lot of conservatives really support. And part of the convention strategy was to remind voters, maybe you don't like everything Donald Trump says, but remember what he's done.
Thanks for that call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. It's our roundup of some of the top stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian, senior political reporter there. You can join in with your thoughts on the party national conventions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stepping away from the content of the convention this week, Lauren, can you talk about the format and the style? We saw the Democrats tackle it in this online version. We've got mostly virtual for Republicans with a little bit of in-person. What do you make of the presentation so far?
It's definitely been something we've never seen before. Democrats was very much, you know, all online. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris spoke from Wilmington. But aside from that, we saw a lot of pre-taped videos. Republicans have taken a similar approach. They began their convention in North Carolina, where they did do an in-person roll call vote, which was different. Democrats did a videotaped one. But since then, we've seen pre-taped speakers have pre-taped their convention speeches in a building here in Washington, D.C. And then we've seen the president has, you know, definitely broken with tradition. And some of his critics will say, you know, is at risk of at least of having his team violate certain ethics laws by hosting part of the convention at the White House, which is, you know, federal property. And, you know, there is usually the tradition of not using federal property to host a very political event, though the president himself cannot violate this act. There are questions about the other secretaries. Yesterday we saw acting Secretary of Department of Homeland Security. He was there overseeing a naturalization ceremony at the White House that aired during the convention in primetime. We saw the president use his executive powers to pardon someone during the convention, which is, you know, I don't think we've ever seen that before. And then Melania Trump, she gave her remarks from the White House garden, which, of course, again, you know, ethics experts and Democrats had real concerns with.
Another point of concern there was another speaker, current Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who submitted a pre-recorded endorsement of the president from Jerusalem. Here's a little listen to what he had to say.
The president exited the U.S. from the disastrous nuclear deal with Iran and squeezed the Ayatollah, Hezbollah, and Hamas. The president, too, moved the U.S. embassy to this very city of God, Jerusalem, the rightful capital of the Jewish homeland. And just 2 weeks ago, the president brokered a historic peace deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. This is a deal that our grandchildren will read about in their history books.
And a lot of people pointed out secretaries of state typically don't participate in conventions or campaign events. And a memo approved by Pompeo in February of this year reads, quote, Senate confirmed presidential appointees may not even attend a political party convention or convention related event. What has been the back and forth over his appearance at the convention?
So we know Democrats they intend to investigate this because he was on an official visit to Israel when he taped these comments. And, you know, as you just said, it's very atypical for, you know, America's top diplomat to really insert themselves into a political event this way, especially when they're abroad and they're meant to be representing all of the United States. It's sort of an internationally. And then clearly he was participating in a political event to support the president of the United States. So there have been a lot of questions just sort of whether it's about the appropriateness of it. But also Democrats now in the House are moving forward and trying to they're asking for documents, and they said they're going to investigate further.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Sherry is with us in Whitewater. Sherry, hello.
Hello. Thank you for this program. I'm wondering if I'm the only person that, when listening to the speeches, especially the first night, could even relate to what to the country that these people were describing. It's like a complete alternate reality. The president has beaten the virus and everything is booming. And, you know, that's not the reality on the ground. That's not what people's lives are like. And I'm also very concerned, again, and I'd like your guests' opinion on this, the norms that are being broken, the, you know, using the White House staff to do election stuff and having all of these staff people doing election speeches and stuff. None of this is okay.
Sherry, thanks a lot for the call. So 2 points there. First of all, of course, the incumbent party wants to put it in positive spin on what's going on in the nation, Lauren. But is there a risk that there will be a lot of people like our caller who think it shows them as out of touch?
Absolutely. So, I mean, obviously, it's not, you know, it's not abnormal for the party to host a convention where they depict, you know, themselves and their vision for the nation as pretty rosy. But I think when the nation is going through so many crises, we obviously have a public health crisis and an economic crisis, and there is social unrest. I think to ignore that, you know, risks this dissonance with voters who are impacted by this. And so I think that was why, you know, Republicans and Democrats do believe, will say that Melania Trump's at least addressing the situation on the ground was helpful to that point. But certainly some of these videos that the RNC has released during the convention and a lot of these speakers, the way they talk about the coronavirus is, you know, detached from the reality that we see. And, you know, and the second point, I think it's interesting that the caller raised this because we just heard Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who was a former member of Congress. You know, he said this morning that he just doesn't think people will care very much about these violations, it's, you know, violation of the Hatch Act, which was meant to sort of draw a line between political activity and official duty. And, you know, he very clearly just thought, you know, the American people, they know that presidents are elected, they know they belong to political parties, so they just won't be bothered by this. So I guess that's a gamble that they're going to make. But clearly, if you have a caller asking about this, maybe that's not true across the board.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter for The Guardian. You can join in at 800-642-1234. At the Republican National Convention, the president, many of the other speakers downplaying the still present pandemic. How is their message tracking with you? What do you think of the Republican Party's announcement of no new platform? How do you compare and contrast the Democrats and Republicans, how they've handled their convention in this unusual year? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Lauren Gambino from The Guardian with us for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics, including this week's Republican National Convention. Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Logan is with us in Green Bay. Logan, hi.
Hi. What I want to comment is about the speech given by, I think, a former lieutenant governor of Florida, who's now legal advisor to the president. It was filled with mendacity because she made statements that couldn't be substantiated. For instance, Hunter Biden and Biden himself in the Burisma scandal. And she also made statement that Biden's family had gained unfairly previously. And I don't know where she gets these facts. They are not substantiated.
I feel that the
Republicans are desperate.
Logan, thanks for the call. Referring, I think, to Pam Bondi, former Attorney General of Florida. The fact checkers are hustling as these conventions go on, Lauren.
Yes, we really appreciate the work they're doing. She gave a speech. You know, actually, I was surprised that she was sort of the first person to really raise you know, these accusations that Republicans have been making for a long time, many of them false, many of them unsubstantiated, as the caller mentioned. But, you know, if you go back, it seems like so long ago now, but this is why Donald Trump was impeached in the first place. He wanted to, he put pressure on Ukraine to look into the links between Hunter Biden and this Ukrainian gas company, and was hoping to harm his potential rival then, now his opponent, but then he didn't know it would be Joe Biden. So, you know, that was a line of attack that we've kind of seen some Republicans and some in the Trump campaign drop recently, but Pam Bondi brought it back last night. You know, again, many of the exact claims, the wider idea of nepotism was maybe perhaps undercut by the fact that, you know, Donald Trump has many children working for him. Many of the keynote speakers at this convention are family members. And, you know, obviously some of the facts were false, but I guess we'll see whether the Trump campaign believes that they are going to ramp up those attacks again. But as I've seen, those have kind of fallen from a priority in terms of the attacks that they are leveraging against Joe Biden.
Thanks for the call, Logan. We'll go to Scott now in Merrill. Scott, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Scott?
I just was saying, I watched both conventions so far, every single night of each one, and from what I'm seeing and my wife's seeing, we're seeing more of the reality of from the Democrats, and the Republicans are seeming like they're lying about everything and making that there's nothing.
You're breaking up there, Scott, but I think we got the gist, Lauren. He thinks the Democrats are portraying America more accurately right now, it sounds like.
Democrats think their best line of attack against Donald Trump is to just keep emphasizing his handling of the coronavirus, that he has missteps at, you know, at every step of the way. He's, you know, made the wrong decision or not done something that could have, you know, perhaps led us to a place where maybe all children could be going back to school, or there would be more widespread testing, or, you know, whatever could be happening right now if Donald Trump had acted differently. That is what they think is their strongest line of defense. We're going to hear from Kamala Harris, the running mate, tomorrow, really, according to the campaign, make a forceful case to that point. So it is no surprise that Democrats emphasized that and talked a lot about the reality of the coronavirus during their convention. But as we've talked about earlier, you know, it is a difficult subject for the president because he is the one in charge right now. You know, he is leading the nation. And as of right now, you know, compared to other countries around the world, we are behind. We lead the nation or lead the world in deaths and infections. And so, you know, to say it's a job well done, that's a really hard case to make.
Thanks for that call. It's our weekly look at some of the latest stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian. I want to move on to another topic before we run out of time, Lauren. Of course, this national story from here in Wisconsin, in Kenosha, the police shooting of Jacob Blake. What kind of response are you seeing on the national political stage?
So nationally, obviously, we're getting a range of responses from across the political spectrum, but I'll start with the obvious ones. You know, yesterday, the Republican National Convention opened with a prayer, and they did pray for Jacob Blake and his family. But then, you know, we also saw Trump really lean into this law and order messaging on Twitter today. He has been really, he's emphasized law and order and really, you know, come out strong against the violence and the looting. And that's been a part of his message for months now. So I think you'll definitely see him continue to use these images of, you know, of burning buildings and violence as part of his campaign to convince people that, you know, you need someone who's very strong on law and order. I would say the risk there is that he's trying to convince people that this is what Biden's America would look like. Obviously, though, that's happening under his administration. Alternatively, we just heard from Joe Biden. He put out a little video just before we spoke, and he said he's spoken to the Blake family, and he's calling for justice for the family. But, you know, he's also actually, and clearly you can tell that the campaign doesn't want to be tagged as being soft on crime, if you will, because in this video statement he put out, he was very, you know, forcefully said, you know, there should not be violence. You're not doing this in his name. This doesn't help. And so that's clearly an attempt to push back on these attacks from Republicans and Trump that he wants to defund the police, which is not the case, and that he supports sort of the more violent elements of these protests, which, you know, have often been peaceful, but especially as we're seeing in Wisconsin now, they can be violent.
In our last minute or so, Lauren, conventions will be over by the end of the week. What are you watching for in the post-convention political landscape?
It's so strange because everything's different. So, we'll watch for that famous, you know, post-convention bump. But I think just there's two very stark visions of America. And so I guess I'm really looking to see, you know, A, did Trump, was he able to expand his base? Was he able to reach out to anyone new, bring anyone in over the course of his 4 days? And alternatively, the Democrats, they tried really hard to show that they have this big, broad coalition that stretches from Bernie Sanders to Republican governors. And so can they keep that coalition? Can they turn out that coalition in numbers enough to win? And I think those are the two big questions that will determine who wins in November.
Lauren, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter for The Guardian, where she covers Congress and the 2020 Democratic presidential campaign. We talked to her today about some of the week's top national political news stories, mainly the Republican National Convention and how that's playing out. That continues tonight and tomorrow night. You can still let us know what you think, the contrast between the two conventions, what messages are reaching you. What do you think they're getting wrong, either party, in their big public event, mostly virtual? Email us with your thoughts at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.